Good morning, I'm Digital Dave, and I'm sitting here with, let's run down the list of names. John Rusick, PhD, Professor John Rusick, I should say, Todd Burrow, and John Zulkowski. Oh, I'm sorry, Brian Sturm. Sorry, Brian, not to forget you or leave you out. You guys represent a company called Swift Enterprises. Now, as I read, you have developed, or I should say are developing, a 100% replacement for aviation fuel, 100% compatible replacement for aviation fuel. It runs through the standard distribution system. It has long-term storage capability that aviation fuel doesn't even possess at this time. Runs through the standard aviation engines with no adjustments or changes. Tell us all about it.
Well, we started off on a venture to find a drop-in replacement that fit form, fit, and function in the aircraft. The problem is without a replacement, eventually the use of tetraethyl lead, TEL, and 100 low lead will no longer be allowed by the EPA. And so that was what we started down, not trying to make a new fuel for cars or for jets, but along the way we found some neat caveats where we can fulfill those markets. But right now we're solely focusing on 100 low lead.
Now, is there a timeline for the replacement of leaded 100 low lead?
Not legally or officially, but practicality says that more than likely 2010 is probably going to be, could be the beginning of the end for it. In any event, whether it's regulated or unregulated, the cost of tetraethyl lead and the number of manufacturers, the cost is going up and the number of manufacturers is going down, so the price becomes wholly it becomes wholly prohibitive. Also, you add to that the air pollution and chemical toxic pollution effects, it kind of kicks it. What we wanted to stress is that our fuel is truly a seamless replacement. That is what we're anticipating, that we should be able to do it in most of the important parameters that need to be done. While 100 low lead fuel right now is classed as 100/130, if you look at it on the books, our fuel right now as it stands is 105/133. The key thing we want to let people know, especially pilots around the world, is that there are alternatives to it, alternatives that meet or exceed 100 low lead right now with no lead, that actually give you a potential benefit in energy, i.e. increased range, decreased fuel consumption, and things that are made from renewable materials yet do not contain any oxygen or alcohols. Everything we have is a hydrocarbon.
Okay, now I'm going to play devil's advocate for here for just a second. I'm going to say that sounds too good to be true. Now, so what I gather is that you're starting with your feedstock and you're actually synthesizing the long chain petrochemical
Exactly. That's right. In typical aviation fuel right now, as we'll show at the 5:30 seminar, there's typically about 75 or 76 components in the fractions that come into petroleum. Ours is truly a binary fuel. Nature wants to make these two particular chemicals out of particular oxygenates out of sugars and out of cellulose and things like that. We discovered this along the way and said, well, wait a minute, these are very hard to get from petroleum, but they're very easy to get from nature. Now, just as in a can of Coke that you buy in Los Angeles tastes the same as a can of Coke that you buy in New York, that's kind of the same simplicity we're looking at here. If we're synthesizing a fuel, taking two ingredients, and those ingredients can have a defined chemical purity, the fuel that I buy anywhere that this fuel is going to be precisely the same fuel. What's the downside? Quite truthfully, time right now. We anticipate going to commercialization, or at least starting this process, by October of next year. That would be October of 2009, just about where we want this to be. On the other hand, we have a lot of work ahead of us to be able to do this. We've done this in the lab, we've done it in semi-scale, and we have to get our pilot plants up and running and things. The biggest danger we have is focus, to make sure we get this focus down, because the biggest threat right now is the loss of 100 low lead and the loss of the next generation of aviation. As a matter of fact, John might want to take a second to talk about the genesis of this project, perhaps.
Certainly.
Yeah, actually, as a pilot, you have about two different options if you don't like 100 low lead. You can derate to 91, 98 octane, which you're losing performance and you're losing range with that type of fuel. Again, the changes that need to go into effect to change the fuel system to be able to use a fuel like AGE85 ethanol. You need a new specification. You need to change the fuel lines and components in the aircraft. So the genesis of this project, as John was just mentioning, we tried to develop a fuel that, again, just was a drop-in replacement. So we took all things into account, the seals, to the bladders, to the Buna that's in the aircraft, to the aluminum fuel lines, to the copper and the carburetor parts, to come up with components in our fuel that would have no adverse reaction to the components that currently are in aircraft that utilize 100 low lead. So about 3 years ago, we were actually flying, both of us were pilots. We're flying back from a corporate trip from Cleveland in a 182 and decided we were sick of paying high gas prices, even 3 years ago. And at that point, since our business was in power, energy, and propulsion, we decided to look down an option that would answer the real need for new fuel in general aviation.
Now, what about older engines, like, say, these big old radials? They probably don't have the hardened exhaust valve seats that are common to most engines designed to run without lead. How does your fuel handle that? How does that work in that engine?
Well, actually, that is a very good point. This fuel works equally well in older engines, even to low octane, 80 octane engines. When you talk about the natural lubricity of the hydrocarbons we use, that would literally replace some of the lubricity that the lead, the tetraethyl lead, adds to the fuel currently. So we really would foresee that in the long term, we're going to increase the longevity of the engines, maybe even at some point in time going to longer TBOs.
One thing to continue on that is the fact that all of this stuff is talk until we get the data, and we have the data through the D910 testing, and the FAA is running the bank of tests right now through their detonation and power mapping that they've done, and that will be released quite soon. And they're anticipating, as well as engine manufacturers, 150-hour tests. We have our own internal tests where we're looking to miking things and trying to find valve seat regression and find out if there's a high temperature problem. We haven't seen anything yet, but again, it's up to the FAA to verify and up to the engine manufacturers to verify that the valve seat regression is not a problem.
Well, one thing I'm gathering is that you guys are very well along. You said you're starting pilot plants. I mean, this is something that we could see in an airport in a year or 2 years, less?
Well, the actual process of taking it to market is three-staged, and right now we're looking at the pilot plant going in Delphi, Indiana. That'll be not only a pilot plant, but a training showcase project, because of the fact that we get calls in from Iceland, New Zealand, and other areas where biomass is going to change from one user to another to produce fuels. This is a place where we'll work with, obviously, in our instance, in the first place, we're working towards sorghum as a base material, as a biomass, because it's extremely high energy content, fivefold what corn produces in terms of per acreage. So we're working on that as our first test, and then from there, of course, it'll come down to the people wanting these plants put together. Okay, well, what is a glutton on the market in New Zealand or Australia will not be obviously the same thing as Indiana. So as that happens, the pilot plant will operate to make sure that those biomass conversions take place smoothly, and then we'll put those plants up and get them running as quickly as possible. But obviously one step at a time, and Delphi is expected to be up and operational in October of 2009 at the latest. That'll be 2,000 gallons a day. And then we, of course, are looking at not only building brand new plants, but converting plants that exist right now, whether they be ethanol or butanol plants, to produce a fuel that obviously exceeds petroleum. So in the instance of a client coming in, it may be a brand new plant built on new ground with a new biomass, and it may be a company that owns six ethanol plants that would like to stop making alcohol and start making a fuel that obviously makes sense. But we'll start working that direction, obviously, after the pilot plant's up and it's run a few weeks of tests, and make sure that we're exactly where we need to be on the process. Performance, obviously, is already there. The process is the next step. So.